listening to Let's Talk on 98.9 FM. Chelsea Bond and Angelina Hurley have a yarn and a laugh about what makes a mob wild this week.
Well, what are you? Are you an Aboriginal or not an Aboriginal?
I'll identify this time as black fella.
It's Wild Black Women on Let's Talk. And here they are. Chelsea Bond and Angelina Hurley.
Hey, here we are.
It is, as usual.
Production values. We got it down pat. It's awesome.
Yeah, awesome.
We have a very special Wild Black Woman show today. We're not in the studio. We're not live, but we're a little bit wild and a little bit black. Good ways.
Yeah.
Hey. we're actually in Nam.
Yeah.
We had to fly down for a special show, and we're talking to Brother Trevor.
Hey, Trevor. Welcome.
How you doing?
Yeah, and see, we're looking at them dimples, but Brother Trevor made us wild a little while ago, so we're going to yarn about what might have made us wild.
Hey.
You just won't look at the dimples.
That's
we're right.
Right. We'll stay wild.
Hey, Mariki. But so because we're not from here, we don't have connections to this place. So as is protocol in our show, we acknowledge the traditional owners of the country that we're on, and because we don't have the connection to this place, we've called in a deadly black sister who is she proper warrior sister. You know, when black fellas get wild in Nam, she's the one who leads the protest that shut down the city.
Oh, wow.
So, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we brought the big guns
What is Nam? Catch me up to speed. Is that
Melbourne.
Oh, okay. Is that a nickname?
So-called Melbourne.
I see. That's the original name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, okay, Nam. Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to, before we get into have this really good conversation, we're going to hand over to Sister Mariki, who's going to acknowledge country for us. And so thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's an honour to sit with you two and you, Trevor. So
thank you, Mariki.
Oh, I'd like to formally acknowledge that we stand in the lands of the Kulin Nation and pay my respects to elders past and present, and make special mention to the Bunurong and Wurundjeri matriarchs who bore the brunt of colonial violence that make up this city, Melbourne. An acknowledgement is an age-old formality to pay respects to country and kinship, an opportunity for us to announce our presence. I'd also like to acknowledge you, Trevor, your mother and your grandmother and their countries. And in the spirit of sharing history, I want to share a little bit of ours. I want to acknowledge Miss Dew, and for cultural reasons, I won't say her name. Miss Dew, a 22-year-old Aboriginal woman who died in police custody in 2014. She went to police for help for fleeing family violence, and they locked her in the cells for unpaid fines, $3,000 worth. She complained of pain to the police, so they sent her to the local medical centre. At the medical centre, they didn't believe her cries in pain and thought she was faking it. So they sent her back to the cells, and where she died, and some of the last words she heard from the police were calling her a junkie. She died from injuries relating to the family violence of conditions easily treated in Western societies. Now, you're probably wondering, Trevor, how is this relevant to you? Well, when you ridicule a minority publicly, you strip them of their humanity and you take away what little empathy people have for them. And right at that moment, when Miss Dew died in those police cells, every single person she had contact with, including her partner, lacked empathy for her. And maybe if they did have empathy, she would be here with us today. I'd also like to acknowledge that you said that you weren't going to say sorry, which is fine, because like my mother always told me, don't say sorry if you don't mean it. In 2008, this country said sorry for acts of genocide against our people. But the thing is, they didn't mean it, because they still continue to commit those acts today. I want to pay an acknowledgement to the long history of love and solidarity between African diaspora and Aboriginal people here in this country, and that your joke was frowned upon by many of us. So we invite you to join us in our fight for survival in these white supremacist settler colonial societies. And in my final words, I'd like to acknowledge the long history of resistance over 230 years that our black women, despite the cruel and relentless attempts to destroy us all, that we are still here, because this always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you, Maruki.
Okay, we're going to have a yarn now, hey? Are we ready or what?
So school me in the language. So what is a yarn? Let's start with that.
Okay. Oh. Auntie Angelina. Okay. Again.
Yeah, well, that's what we're doing right now. We're talking. We're yarning. We're telling stories.
It's a conversation?
Yeah, it's a conversation.
Just hanging out? Like a... Okay,
but
okay.
But a yarn's more... I think it's like...
Not
formal. It's not an interview?
No.
It's more... So we haven't got a question list. It's a yarn because we don't have a conversation.
Oh, nice.
And it's a good way of like an exchange. And yeah, and so we're excited that we can have a yarn, you know.
I'm excited to have a yarn with you. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, cool.
Cool. And we're actually really surprised that you want to sit at the table with wild black women.
Why?
So,
why are you surprised?
I don't know why people get scared of our shade shells. Wild black women people for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, when you come to this country, you could easily ignore and erase Aboriginal women.
Right.
And no one would call you on it.
Right.
No one would. Like, you don't have to sit here with us. And not that we're going, oh, so thank you so much for you know, gracing us.
Right.
But this is a reality. And that was part of what was interesting when the joke came out. There were a whole lot of people who were dismissing the logics underpinning it and were just like, oh, you know, it's just leftish outrage and was
right. really
dismissive of what Aboriginal women were saying. Yeah. And we're used to being ignored. Yeah, you know, our pleas go unnoticed,
right.
you know.
But let's if you don't mind, let's start the conversation there, because that's why I wanted to hang out with the two of you. I listened to a bit of the show, and you know what's interesting.
Geez, I wonder what episode.
What's interesting is, like, you have so many people online these days who have so many conversations about what makes them angry or what they're outraged by or what they're rightfully angered by, that I genuinely was lost in this conversation. And I wanted to sit with you as Aboriginal woman in Australia and say to you, let's start the conversation there. What part of the joke offended you?
Okay.
It's the logic that underpinned the joke. Because in this country, white men have long joked about their entitlement to sexual violence upon Aboriginal women.
Right.
The half-caste menace is a result of that violence. And so there's a really offensive terms that are still in use in this country, that Aboriginal women are not necessarily desirable or attractive.
Right.
But they're good for something else, and that is all. So the logic of what we hear in the joke.
What's fascinating to me is this is the first time I'm hearing that.
Really?
Yeah. Genuinely.
Okay.
So I'll tell you.
Thanks, Triple J, for your interviewing skills.
But genuinely, this is
I didn't ask that question.
This is when you talk to white people.
Right. But this is hilarious. So I'll give you the full story of a joke and how interesting it is to travel around the world and understand context when you move from one continent to the next. So when I first told that joke, the context of the joke, which a lot of people have cut out because of expediency on the internet and headlines and clickbait, was I was reading a headline in South Africa, and the headline was written in a newspaper in Cape Town, and it had ranked racial attractiveness. And this is in 2013, 2012. And the headline and the newspaper said, white people are basically the only attractive people, the most attractive people, and then went down in rankings, very similar to apartheid, where they said, these people are not attractive, and these people are not attractive because of this, and these people are not attractive because of that. And it was a huge story in South Africa, and obviously people were angry about it. I was one of those people. But for me, it was less the anger and more just the illogic of the argument. So I genuinely am a comedian because I find too many things funny, things that many people wouldn't, or I use humor to process things that may be otherwise painful for me. But what I did in that conversation was, with my friends, I argued and I said, I don't believe that anybody can say that anybody's unattractive as a group because they have not seen all of the people, and also beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So I'll give you an example.
In the context of having a conversation right. with friends.
So I was having a yarn with my audience, right? And so it's funny because my mom always used to say to me, she'd always say with my stepdad, she'd say, he's the ugliest man ever, and that's what I love about him. I never want to date an attractive man. And so I've always believed that attractiveness is something that you choose as a person, and how you define it is up to you. Now, there are standards that have been defined by beauty industry, et cetera, but this was one of those instances where I was like, no, man, I don't believe this. I was like, I'm going to try and write a joke about how all women are beautiful, regardless of how people see them. And so as I go through the joke, it's how I believe all women are beautiful, regardless of their race. And, you know, like people, and I use the negative thing that people say, and then I come in with the positive. So people say, oh, Indian women don't have legs or whatever this. And then I say, but here's all the positives. And they say, black women don't have hair that is good or whatever. And I come in with the positives. And that's what I was doing in the joke. And one of the things that I had stumbled across was the notion in all of the races where someone had said, oh, Aboriginal women are not good looking. And that's why in the joke I say, no, you should say, I have not seen a good looking Aboriginal woman yet, because I can't force you to find someone attractive. But what I do believe is you cannot write off an entire race of people unless you have met them. And because you have limited exposure to these people, there's a good chance that I heard friends who'd say that about Asian people in school. You know, they'd be like, I don't find Asian women attractive. I say, you can't say that. You haven't seen all Asian women. Just say you in your limited world have not seen someone you found attractive.
Why Aboriginal woman? Like, why us?
Because that was the thing.
Because, you know, we're not really known globally. We're not, you know, we're not.
But you are.
We are raised a lot, and that's the really thing I'm interested in. Is how did you come to know of the Aboriginal woman in your imagination?
And that's what's really interesting. Is I came to realize only when I came to Australia that the image I had of Aboriginal women was one that had been created and crafted for me by so many different mediums, including National Geographic, mm-hmm. who coincidentally recently apologized for how they've portrayed native peoples around the world as savage.
Time, you fellas. Yeah.
Right, as
yeah.
being savage, etc., right? I came to realize that genuinely I saw Aboriginal people the same way I saw, let's say, the Khoisan or the San in South Africa, as just being noble hunter-gatherers who don't want to live in the rest of society.
So we didn't get the whole, but maybe they're nice people. No, we're like, maybe they give good head.
Yeah.
That was the hard part.
Right.
Yeah,
and you see,
part.
I didn't, what's crazy to me is I had no clue, even till how long ago? 7 minutes ago? I didn't know about the sexual connotation, which is so funny because no one takes the time to teach
you this. What else do you do in bed with someone?
No. What I'm saying is I didn't know about the sexual connotation with Aboriginal women in Australia.
Right.
Does that make sense?
But colonization, white men have raped black women across the globe. Like, colonization is pretty similar, you know, like...
Right.
And
you must understand, coming from a black person's point of view, I wasn't making that joke from that perspective.
Yeah.
I was making the joke from what I've now come to learn, funny enough, is more a male-dominated, misogynistic perspective, and that was, beauty is not only as you see it, it is also many other things. So there are some people who go, oh, I don't think that this person is physically beautiful, but I think their personality is beautiful, or I think the sex that we have is the most beautiful thing in the world. And that's the logic I was using at the time. Were I to create that joke now, I wouldn't write it like that. It wouldn't be as crass. It would be something that would be a bit more crafted. And that's what you're always trying to do in comedy, and as a human being, I feel, is try and write jokes the best way you know how. So 5 years ago, Trevor would not write the joke the same way. And 5 years before that, Trevor wouldn't write the joke the same way. But my intention was to try and create a world where I said, all women are beautiful, stop putting one group above another, and that beauty is defined by the person that engages with the woman that they find attractive. Now, the reason I never did that joke in Australia is because I was lucky enough to meet an Aboriginal woman at the museum who said to me, hey, I love your comedy, and I saw you've got like a joke about a didgeridoo. And she said, that's not like a joke here. That has been something that has been lauded over Aboriginal people for so long and has been used to mock them, and it's not. And I genuinely always thought like the didgeridoo was just like a traditional vuvuzela in Australia. I didn't think it was
the meaning of it.
Yeah. And so that's what's powerful is learning these things as you move through the world, funny enough, because the context in South Africa is not the same. Because you must remember, we are not a minority in South Africa. We start there.
Yeah.
We're a country that has conquered the other way around. We're a country that has flipped the power structure. Now, it's not completely flipped because of money and economy, but we're in a different place as a country. And so in South Africa, the way that joke is delivered and the way the joke is taken is completely different when you move over to Australia, which I now understand and even understood when I came to the country for the first time. But now you've taught me yet another thing, which is blowing my mind even in this moment.
Well, okay, you can count on a black woman to teach a black man about respect. I think about your own mother's notes to you.
Right.
This is like our little yarn. We might cut to a
quick break and come back to the colonization stuff.
Sounds good.
Interesting.
Take it over, Auntie.
Mm.
Let's Talk on 98.9 FM. It's Chelsea Bond and Angelina Hurley.
It is, and Chelsea Bond, Angelina Hurley, and Trevor Noah.
Trevor Noah, joining in for the yarn.
Yay. Oh, look, he's got it. With the wild black woman, because we've been a bit wild with Trevor, so he's come to have a yarn proper ways, which is good. That's what you do when you get in trouble. you just face up to it, and then it's all good. What are you going to say something, Angelina?
Our show pretty much exists because there's a lack of Indigenous voices. There's a lack of black women, Aboriginal women's voices in this country. We're silenced. You don't hardly see us on TV. Probably one or two. You know, and there's huge conversations in panel shows on mainstream TV and on places like ABC and Channel 9. And they have these discussions about us without us.
Right.
You know, there's no talking to us about our response to these things. And they're always, you know, disrespectful, derogatory, their perception of things, you know, and that's why we do what we do. We have a laugh and a yarn and you know, call out racism,
right?
You know, everything that happens during the week. But that's why, you know, and that's why we really wanted to respond and really hear your response about, you know, why.
Yeah, we want to talk about the response as well, because there was a little bit of a response to all of this.
A little bit.
Some people wrote Twitter essays. But I just before we go there, I just wanted to I was just curious with the sort of move from the joke itself, but was that the first and only time that joke was told in the public domain? Was, you know, when you're playing with material, you develop it, test it. Had it been tested before? And who was the audience it had been, you know, who was the audience? Was it largely a white audience? Was it largely a black audience?
My audience in South Africa is an extremely mixed audience, which is I would say if you break it down, I mean, you'd literally, we've done this many times where we've been amazed at how mixed my audience is. So it's Indian people, colored people, black people, white people in an audience mixed together. It was a mixed group of people. And that run of the show was probably maybe 15 dates or, maybe 10 to 15 dates. So,
and at no time during that kind of thing, was it ever any question raised around it?
No, it was the opposite at the time. You know, I had women who were saying to me, well, thank you for fighting against this article. Because the context was, I was trying to create something as a piece of work that was, at that time, what I perceived to be a feminist point of view. You know, and this is something I always acknowledge as a person, and that is we're always growing and we're always learning as people. And if you look at the language we use now versus 5 years ago, for most people, not speaking for yourselves, the way we process ideas 5 years ago, 10 years ago, etc., you realize that we're always becoming more evolved in our conversations, you know, whether it be around transgender rights, whether it be around indigenous peoples, whether it be around the power dynamics. Yeah. And so any piece of comedy I find is a snapshot of its time.
Sure. And I mean, I struggle sometimes with the conversation of its time, because here in the colony, it's never stopped. Never had a, you know, we haven't had our post-colonial moment yet. I'm waiting for it.
Right.
We often are told to.
Me too, because I was thought, you know, there's a colonial background of South Africa.
Right.
And, you know, we're listening to that stuff and going, wow, you know, we're excited when we see you
on the
show and hear your stuff, that, you know, brother's on our side.
You're speaking to us.
We're speaking to us. We get it. It was like, oh, yes, you know, yes. Not exactly a Meg Ryan moment, Trev.
I'm with you.
You know, you know, just one yes. But, yeah, you know.
Tell lies.
And then we hear that and we go, he comes from this place that is like our place.
Right.
What
and, you know, because, you know, the white people over there are coming here now.
Oh, yeah.
We're saving your white people. Oh, thank you very
much.
We've noticed.
Trust me, we've noticed. And you see, that's one of the funny things. And that's what I've noticed about context in comedy. It's been, and it's really been an interesting journey for me. I've learned that the context of the joke changes depending on what audience you're in. And so for me, I've even learned that there are jokes in America that I would do with a predominantly black audience that don't have the same context and connotation if I do them in front of a white audience, because the way the joke is laughed at versus laughed with changes completely. And so I honestly try and explain to people that when you're in South Africa in that moment, I can't speak for every member of my audience, but I know that most of the people there are laughing at it the same way we laugh at every cultural joke we make. Because if you come, honestly, I will say this, but yeah, what were you going to say?
Well, it makes me think of Dave Chappelle and some of his material.
Right.
When he discovered people laughing at his material were laughing at it for a different reason.
Right.
And so if I grant you that and go, okay, your intention was not that reference, that connotation, but the first time I heard it, there was no, well, I did question whether it was you, because I was like, no, Trevor wouldn't do that to us. There was no question for me in terms of the meaning of it and why some people would have laughed at the joke. So we also laugh at different things.
Yes.
And so that joke had currency for certain people, and it was very similar to the kind of violence that we've encountered. Whether or not you intended to, that's our reality of it.
Right.
And
it started hitting more home after the responses afterwards, and sort of like the responses afterwards to that sort of stuff, kept getting worse for us. It was like, yeah, the aftermath of it, you know. And
wait, are you saying after the joke?
Yeah, like, and after we had actually spoken about it, you know, like,
because Aboriginal women didn't have a right to have a say about a joke that included Aboriginal women.
Yeah.
Now, very rarely are Aboriginal women on an international stage. Like,
right.
We've got women dying in police custody at the hands of the state. That doesn't make international news. But we make international news when there's a joke about, you know, the possibility that not all Aboriginal women are attractive.
Right.
And so it has a meaning for us.
Yeah. And the issue that we had, you know, people were taking offence to, is that we had a high to actually respond to something that was affecting us. And they were getting annoyed at that. And we're going, well, it was directed at us. It's about us. We have the right to respond to it.
Right.
Yeah.
And there were people writing op-eds, Lauren, thank you very much, saying that we are, that what are you after from Trevor? A pound of flesh, a pint of blood? It's like, no, we're after sorry. And we're not asking for you. And so it wasn't about asking for, this is beyond good guys and bad guys.
Right.
Or demonising or vilifying one person.
Because
this sits on a landscape that has been inherently violent for Aboriginal women in this country.
Right.
And it's about an acknowledgement of that. And particularly when you have a platform that has put Aboriginal women onto a stage,
uh-huh.
to be able to say, while I've got this stage, to those sisters, I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm just sorry. That's it.
But you know what I worry about sometimes? Is maybe it's because of the job I do now and the world I live in, which is immersed in politics. I feel like sorry has too much currency. And I feel like that because I look at politicians who say sorry every day and then do nothing different. I look at police who say sorry every day and then do nothing different.
Yeah.
For me, actions speak louder than words.
Yeah.
And so although I will never say that I'm proud of a joke that I did way back, there's many jokes that I wouldn't tell today just because I'd like to think that I've grown, you know? And I like to think in 5 years I'll look back at jokes that I tell now and go like, what were you thinking? Why did you write it like that? How could you say that? I always hope to be growing as a person. But what I do know is when just one Australian person told me about the significance of just the didgeridoo, I cannot tell you guys how excited I was to come to Australia and make didgeridoo jokes. Genuinely, because
no,
I thought
they all do it. It's
yeah,
so,
but I thought it was
it's
hilarious.
Sad. It's sad,
I thought
yeah.
it was. It's the same way people come to South Africa and they make click jokes. You know, yeah. they come and they go and like we laugh at it because genuinely we're in a different place. Because South Africa is in a place where black people are in power.
Yeah.
You know, black people. There's a black president. Black people are starting.
Are you rubbing it in or what?
No.
You trying to make us feel good or what?
No, we're just yarning.
Are you teasing us or what?
Hey, we can save you. You can come to us and we can flip it around. But so what I'm saying is,
we're not leaving. Here, though, this is ours.
So what I'm saying is the flip that's interesting is that you come to realize, like one person told me, and all it took was one person, and I said, you know what? If that's the case, I never need to make this joke ever again. And that's exactly what I did. And if you listen to my material when I was in Australia, not only did I never do that joke, I told jokes about my experience of Aboriginal people and the story that I was told in Australia, which wasn't popular to many people in the audience, by the way, because they felt like I was drudging up the past, or I was. But I was like, no, but I.
Yes, white people are a bit fragile here, Trevor.
Right.
Just a warning.
I get that. So for me,
this is how they go.
So for me, please understand, it's not out of insensitivity. I think it's rather about genuineness. I cannot say sorry to you, as my mother taught me. For something that I don't believe in, when I go like, but what are you saying sorry for? If I did something now, I will say sorry. But if you go, Trevor, when you knew less or when you were in another country and knew nothing about this, you did something, I'd say to you, I've stopped. I've changed. Is that not more important? Is that not more important than...
Is there a statute of limitations on a sorry? Not that I don't want to drag it out. I don't want to drag
it
out.
Oh, no,
sorry.
Not at all.
That's what I'm curious about in terms of the thinking.
But I rather think of the efficacy of it. That's genuinely how I feel. So I will be honest with you. I don't care about any of the sorries that came from the apartheid government.
Sure.
What I care about is the change that's implemented. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like Jewish people don't care about the sorries from the Nazis. They want their money back. They want their gold back, and they want people to go to jail.
Yeah.
Exactly. So at some point, the action for me speaks louder than words. And I completely understand where any side of the argument can come from.
And the only reason I ask is that I'm going to go for time. When I know someone passed away, for instance,
right.
And I just lost my sister or something like that, I go, I'm sorry.
Right.
I didn't cause it, had nothing to do with it. It's just at a human level, when you acknowledge someone's humanity,
yes.
it means acknowledging their pain. Whether or not you did it last year, whether it was intentional, because we often have in this country, apparently to qualify for something to be racist, there has to be intent. And we know that's not how race works.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
And that's what white people use as a defense mechanism. But I didn't intend to. But
right.
that was so long ago. It's in the past. Get over
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah.
So some of the responses were familiar to us in terms of what white people have said to us when we've said, hey, that's hurt us. And so it was kind of like in the response, there was a revisiting of what is very familiar to us in this country.
That's interesting. Do you,
from a brother. So that from us was like, from a brother.
Can I ask you then honestly though, do you not believe that intent should be taken into account at all in any of these circumstances?
In what circumstances?
In any instance where a person has been offended or hurt, should intent never be considered?
Look, I think there's also always consideration, but if it's used as a defense mechanism, I think about let's say I'm back in the car out and I accidentally run over someone and I break their leg.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to.
Right.
But the leg's broken.
Right.
And I have a responsibility to make sure that person gets healed. Because I caused it, whether I meant to or not.
Right.
And so for me, when I hear that something hurt someone, like this is my personal thing. and I didn't actually want to cause harm to someone, I really didn't want to cause harm, but I heard that I did, then I'm going to say sorry because I didn't never intended to hurt.
Right.
So I wouldn't leave them in that pain if I knew I could just go, you know what, that was messed up what I did, and I really didn't want to, and I'm really sorry for that. And I'll never do it again. We're not one to sorry, because it's too late now for sorry. But that's what I'm explaining to you. That's why the sense of hurt around it.
And there's also a different understanding of the word sorry and its meaning and its connotation as well.
In what way?
In that non-Indigenous Australians and, you know, white people see it as, you know, if we're saying sorry, we're admitting guilt. And
right.
It's attached to empathy and respect.
It's human. It's to be right. human. It's to be human.
It's not just going, oh, I'm sorry. It's more than that for us.
Right.
Because the thing with black fellas here is we're framed as radical sometimes, but we're actually really, really accommodating. If you think about the stuff that we've indulged and entertained on our country, you know, even what we're asking for politically, a treaty. We're asking for an arrangement of how we coexist. We're not sending them back home. We're asking for coexistence. So we're pretty generous. We're pretty forgiving. And so when that comes, when we say, here, just acknowledge people's humanity, then we're good.
Right.
We're good. You know, yeah. And so, but the thing that makes us wild is that we often have to demand to be seen as human, and being seen as human is having our emotions validated.
That makes complete sense. Let me ask you this, though, going back to the analogy of backing up the car. The difference is the person who is backing up the car does not operate in the space where their car is meant to be hitting people in any way, shape, or form. As a comedian, though, I believe that I'm engaging in thoughts and ideas that may at times offend some people and may at times make people uncomfortable. There are things that I say on stage that I use to either tackle an idea, or I would even say a thing that I don't believe in to try and get to an idea to dismantle it. So I'll give you an example. The very same construction as the joke around women or Aboriginal women is a construction I used around terrorism, right? And so I say in my joke, and I've heard a lot of people say, not all Muslims are terrorists, but all terrorists are Muslim. And then I respond to that notion in my joke. Do you get what I'm saying? Which is exactly what I do with the Aboriginal thing, is I say, and I've heard some people say, oh, I don't think Aboriginal women are attractive. And then I respond to it. Now, my response, as I will admit, is not the classiest, nor is it the most finessed. And that's how I wrote comedy.
And there's no way to finesse that one. There's no way to finesse that part of that joke.
There really isn't. But when you look at what I'm trying to do as a comedian, though, comedy is inherently going to offend somebody along the way. And so the difference
is... Oh, we do that every week.
Right.
Yeah. We do that every week. But we punch up. We punch up, Trevor.
No. Now, you see, what did you just say?
We punch up.
You punch up. What does that imply?
But the logic of the joke that made it funny,
yes,
is that we are at the bottom rung. And I know you've talked about how race and gender work for black women.
Yes.
When you're an Aboriginal woman, we're not even black. We're right. The lowest of the low.
But now,
and so that joke was funny in a particular way because we're at the very bottom. So any joke that involves us is it's the same logic that enables the violence that Aboriginal women continue to experience in this country. And so we laugh. Our whole show every week is us laughing about our oppression, you know, like,
yes.
Ended in a snorts, right?
Right.
So you know, like Val Hooks, we make our oppression work for
right.
us, you know, we put it to work and we do that all the time. But what we need from a brother is not to make us do extra work.
I'm with you completely.
Yeah, that's the thing.
We've had to really work.
I'm with you completely.
Yep.
And I hate that you've had to face that from an Australian side for a joke that was told in South Africa in 2013.
Not just Australia.
Right. No, but what I'm saying, wait, where else from?
Well, your sister Leslie Jones didn't like the fact that we were calling out someone who said a joke years ago, and she was on The View going, why would you do that? It's a stupid thing to do. You should just forget about it. We get told to forget about things a lot.
Yeah, suck it up, princess.
You've got to laugh at it. Just laugh, just get over it. We get told to get over it a lot. And the thing is, people don't realize what a funny bunch of people that we actually are.
Humor right.
is predominantly well, how we survived. Our community. It's a very predominant survival mechanism and tool
right.
for us. You know, we're telling jokes and laughing all the time. To hear that sort of commentary about stuff, it's like you have no idea how much humor and comedy plays as a resilience for us.
Because right. white people are really funny. We laugh at them all the time. You know, we're gonna continue this yarn because it's good.
Let's do this.
It's
great.
Good.
I'm loving this.
Before we go there, you're not gonna tell that joke again, eh?
No, I haven't told it for 5 years.
Oh, he can knock it. She can knock it.
Think you gonna get away with it? Not up in here. Not up in here.
Not up in here, Trevor. We're gonna cut to the most appropriate song right now.
Aboriginal Woman.
Backbone of Our Spiritual Ways.
On 98.9 FM. It's Chelsea Bond and Angelina Hurley.
And?
Still yarning with Trevor Noah.
He's enjoying it too. It's good fun. Hey, Trevor.
I'm having a great time with you.
Yeah, awesome.
Before we went away, though, there was one point that I just wanted to go back on.
He likes to debate, this fella.
I do. Yeah, I love to debate. I think we don't debate enough in society. I think we shout at each other as people and we don't debate.
I ain't scared of you.
So thank you for having me here. to your point, real quick, two things. One, with Leslie Jones, as you said,
I was watching a sister because, you know, I'm a fan of comedy. I lived in New York for 2 years. I hit every comedy club and was watching people, and, you know, I was noticing her come up too. And then she said that thing. It was like, oh, she stabbed me in the gut, sis. Really?
Right.
You know, it felt...
Well, one thing I'll tell you, I know Leslie personally, and there are few people out there who are more vehemently opposed to the oppression of black women in any way, shape, or form. I think in that response, honestly, if I can say this in
her
defense...
That's why we're wild with her. We're like, come on, sissy, you know what it's like to be picked on like that.
Right, and this is the thing. Interesting to what you're saying with punching up, punching down. South Africa post-apartheid was in a really interesting place where everyone was down. And then overnight, we were promised a world where people were equal. And now, although that equality has not been achieved, as you know, it doesn't happen overnight. One thing that we were able to achieve in comedy specifically was a space where we felt a freedom to make fun of each other equally across the board. And so you would be making jokes about Indian people, and Indian people would be making jokes about black people, and vice versa, and flip it around, and everyone would be making the jokes everywhere. And I remember there were comedians who'd come to South Africa from Australia, the UK, wherever, and they'd go, you can't say that in our country. You cannot say that. Oh, that's offensive. That is. And we were like, offensive to you, but we need this to heal. This is how we
but
get
yeah,
through.
But yeah, talk about your own mob, not about us.
Right.
That's the
right,
thing.
Right.
You know?
And so that's the thing is sometimes you don't realize. No, but here's the thing that's funny. I was talking within us. The internet has changed the way information travels, right? So a joke that I told in 2013 to a South African audience in the South African context is completely fine. Once it travels the globe and tackles Australian issues, it changes the context, which I completely understand. It's similar to a thing that happened to me with the French, where I was making a joke about how the French national team won the World Cup.
Yeah, and it's a fair point. Yeah.
Right, but it was it was really just a little joke about like owning something that's not yours. Oh, that's Africa's World Cup. It's just a joke of pride. The French ambassador then came back and said, hey man, just so you know, white nationalists use this line of attack against black people in France. And now as Trevor, I didn't know that. But also my intention was not to say that. I'm saying from my side, my intention is to say, my brothers, I am proud of you because you come from this continent and we are proud of you and we'll try to claim your success even though it's not ours.
Oh, we claim any black people as ours.
Right.
Like, it's your, unless they do something wrong, we're like, that's your cousin, not mine.
That's your man.
But I'm
your
saying,
uncle.
But I'm saying, like, do you see how there would be some who are French who weren't saying it in a non-genuous way, but they would say like, hey, but Trevor, I was offended by that. And I go, look, I understand that you're offended, but you have to understand my context as well. And what I'm saying to you is I won't make that joke again because I'm not trying to hurt you.
Yeah,
but
cool.
I don't believe that what I did was wrong. I just learned something about how France tackles its issues in and around race and the French identity. And as Trevor, I go, it doesn't cost me anything to not do that joke. I've learned something and I've presented my point of view to you and you've presented it back. And I think with comedy, we're in an interesting conversation right now where I think Leslie Jones was responding to what a lot of comedians are saying right now. And that is, it seems like people are approaching comedy with the same, reverence that they would politicians. It's funny that we live in a world where comedians are engaging with people around what they've said, but politicians are taking what they've said and saying it's a joke. And we see it everywhere. We see it with Boris Johnson. You see it with Donald Trump. You see it around the world where people go, oh, it's
so
just joking.
Roseanne Barr.
Yeah.
They go,
oh,
it's just joking.
What's her last name? Is she Roseanne? Roseanne.
Yeah, Roseanne.
Right.
Did she joke about some stuff and lose a show or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So is that
right?
Is
she
that
said
the same,
that she was a joke.
Like, how does that work? You know, like, how does that work in other contexts? Like, I just don't think the idea that we can say, look, I'm a comedian, so I have free license.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's the joking about raping Aboriginal women. You know, the term gin jockey. I knew it as a kid. Black Velvet. These jokes were violent, and we just need you to hear that.
Can you go backwards and explain that to me? No, genuinely, I don't. You've just skipped a few steps, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Even the broad strokes, if it's tough or painful, I genuinely just need to understand a little bit.
So, gin is a derogatory term for Aboriginal women.
Yeah.
So, a gin jockey, you know what they do?
No.
It's men who, derogatory term for men having sex.
Oh,
with
okay,
with
okay,
Aboriginal
right.
Women who they refer
for the most
to.
Part, they're
right.
Not consensual.
Okay.
You know, so
yeah, and it's not
that, and that was you, and people defended that joking of that. It's written into poetry. It's like it's there, and I guarantee you, in every colony, it was there. The jokes about this,
right?
And so to then, we haven't hit our post-colonial moment. We can go, you know, it's just a joke now because it's still our reality,
right? Right, right.
And so I hear that the intent was not there, but I'm sure you're hearing the violence of it. And at a human level, we can just go, look, you know, I don't have to defend it anymore.
Right.
It just was messed up.
And I
don't have to defend my industry.
Right.
Because you're going to be fine. Everything's going to be good. But we've got sisters here going, there are black women in this country who will not be fine.
Right, right, right.
And I think... We don't make it out of here.
And I think
right.
What would come from people like Leslie's being a sister, you know, and we would call her that she would just understand that, you know, okay, those sisters have a right to be peed off at that.
Right, right, right.
You know, and just leave it at that.
And you know, black women, we forgive black men for a whole lot of stuff. A whole lot of stuff. We're, yeah.
We constantly, you know. We gotta take the
power back. I hear you.
You know. But so, look,
I should have come with my own buttons.
Well, you can press to Angelina's button. She
I should have come with my own that I had prepared.
You should have. Do you want to have a play with Angelina's buttons? Have a look what we got.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, that's exciting. But yeah,
She was, can I say, she was playing this one for you. Can I play the one you're pressing for him?
When it happened.
Let's hear the one you...
Be prepared.
I'm ready. You so
much right now. We were heartbroken, Trevor. It's a long sound.
Oh, it's the whole song? Wow. That's not a button. That's the whole song.
She pressed it more than once, too. Just there.
Right. Look. The one thing I'll say is this. I don't know. Maybe it's how I was raised, and maybe it's also the country I grew up in. But I honestly feel that for me, I have been disappointed or hurt by somebody I've looked up to or a fan or anything, anyone I've engaged with. But what I've always tried to do is measure my disdain or my disappointment in them against why I liked them in the first place. And so for me as Trevor, I go, when I said that line, it's one part of a joke that I understand now can have so much pain and weight attached to it when it switches consonants, which I understand now more than ever. Even as I said from the beginning of this interview, I've learned new things. But as someone who's been in Australia, I'm proud to say that in the little time that I've been here and on the stages that I've performed on, I haven't been afraid to share my points of view around what's happening in Australia, yeah, around Aboriginal people.
Wow. So what can we expect from this show tonight? Are you gonna offend some white people, please?
No, but you,
us,
but
come
you
on,
see,
do something.
But you see, but that's the thing.
For the sake of comedy, can you please get some white people angry?
But that's,
we need something.
But that's genuinely not what I try and do. That's not what I, that's, you see, that's the funny thing about my comedy is that's, I'm never trying to do that. I've never
Can you unintentionally offend some white people while you're here?
That happens all the time. That happens all the time. Right, that really happens all the time. So you said you wanted to talk to me about the responses or the...
We did get wild at other people who got wild about it.
Right.
Because everyone had an opinion on it, but yes, No one's listened to Aboriginal women's opinion
right
on it, and
yeah,
we're using it for...
Yeah, the annoying thing was that everyone else had an opinion, but they weren't listening to our opinion of it.
Right.
Or our response to it.
So, well, they were chastising us for how we should respond to the stuff that affects us.
Right.
Yeah, so...
But your brother there... Pierce, yeah, you were there.
Oh,
did you try
and find
his DMs or what?
No.
How'd it go?
I DM'd him. Oh. No, I didn't. I just put it out.
Come
there
on, you can be honest. You can be honest.
No, but he was, and I know his agenda, and he's not hiding it. He was, you know, he's got an agenda straight out there.
Right, right.
You.
No, he's
but,
had a long commitment to Aboriginal women. You know, I've heard him use his platform a lot.
Yeah. I don't like him. I can't stand him.
No one can see it. No one can see you rolling your eyes. Now when I listen to the show, I'll know when to look for you rolling your eyes. I like that.
Yeah. There's no roll your eyes button.
There is no roll your eyes button.
No.
So he was using this moment as his own promotional tool and stuff like that.
And Angelina, who do you think you
are? I was just like, you know, dear Pierce, you know, we don't need your help fighting this thing. You know, we got this, go away.
Did he respond to you?
No.
Did you get likes or retweets or anything?
No, he DM'd.
I think
me.
I reached out.
No,
actually, he's up next. No, yeah, it was the thing is, like, we're used to being the butt of the joke, but we're also used to having our bodies used, you know, sexually, domestically, politically, in every which way, because the colony is violent, right? And so there are people, so white women who claim to be feminists in this country write op-eds to, you know, chastise the left for their, you know, this whole thing about apparently we're outraged all the time, or apparently black women are all left-leaning and we're all outraged, whatever. Then you have these other people who are jumping on, like wanting to take you on because they've got an issue with you and using black women's bodies as a way to do that.
Right.
And so we're wild about that because it was like, hey, stay in your lane. This is not your place to be talking.
Right.
This
is
Aboriginal woman's conversation to be having with you. And to your credit, like, to come here and give an hour of your time before your show to sit and have this yarn, which is never an easy one. Like, you know, we have this back and forth.
Right.
I have respect for you for making that time.
No,
to
appreciate you.
Own up and to face up, you know, because you could have just ignored us like most Australians do.
Press the clap button now.
Which one's the clap button?
Yeah,
I need that one.
And then there's... Run this mother.
Right. But the reason I came is because...
I ain't scared of you.
Hey! Who do you think you are? Yeah, you see, you let him touch your buttons. This is where it goes. Here, we're out of time.
Yes, I know.
Wow, are we out of time already?
Have we got another segment? Are we finished? We out of time.
We're done completely? We should do this more often, guys.
We should. Well, we're in Brisbane. We can do it again.
We should just do it over and over again. No, but can I tell you something? One thing I wish I had when I came out here, and I was really lucky because I met two people who reshaped how I saw Aboriginal people and their relationship with Australia. I think you shouldn't take for granted, and you don't have to do anything, you know, but one thing I would say is don't take for granted how narratives have been shaped and ideals and ideas have been created around the world about Aboriginal people. You know, I honestly grew up in a world where the best references I had was Crocodile Dundee, and it's always like, you know, the image of the noble savage is one that you're presented with. Oh,
it's a global one for Indigenous people.
Right,
and people go,
oh, Trevor, they don't want to live in houses. Oh, they don't like houses. We try to give them a lot of things in Australia, but they don't want it, Trevor. Yeah, that's, you know, they don't want the houses. They want to live outdoors. That's Aboriginal people. And I was really lucky.
Oh, wow, that's impressive. I'm impressed.
You've been practicing that for the show.
You better do it tonight.
And so I was genuinely lucky that, like, I met a few people. Like I said, it was one young Aboriginal woman who's a fan, and she just pulled me aside and said to me, "Hey, I love your stuff. Just don't do the didgeridoo thing, whatever you do." Mm. And she said to me, because it's sacred. It's as simple as that, and we take it seriously.
Dave Chappelle did a stupid didgeridoo joke when he was here
But the thing
racism
is,
connoisseur did didgeridoo jokes.
But my thing is, and that's what I'm saying, is, like, don't take for granted. And that's why I say I wish we could do this more, and... I really hope we'd have another conversation, because I genuinely believe the conversations and the connections you have with people is how you start to learn about people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I want to finish up with the words of one of our scholars here, an Aboriginal woman, which is quite fitting. And she says that the most dense relationship is not between actual people, but between white Australians and the symbols created by their predecessors. Australians and other people do not know and relate to Aboriginal people. They relate to stories told by former colonists. And we know that. I teach Indigenous studies and have international students, and I know that their relationship with me is via those produced by the colony, which are inherently violent. But we thank you for coming to have a relationship with us, to listening to Sister Mariki.
Thank you very much.
And respectfully, and yeah.
I really appreciate
you. We're going to see the show tonight.
Thank you for your time. Excited to have you.
Come to Brisbane and press my button.
Hey, stop it. Knock it off. Only Colleen's listening. Knock it off.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Okay, Wild Black Women just walked out of the Trevor Noah Show in Melbourne. We gave him an opportunity to redeem himself today as an interview. We were very, very generous, and we kind of feel a little bit... Okay, yeah, the show was very disappointing. And in his comedy show, addressing that issue, yeah, at the show, he made a really quite pathetic attempt at addressing it, really bad, simplistic jokes about the issue. I don't know, Chelsea...
Hear what? Look, you know what? I want to apologise to the sisterhood, to the black woman, because we went into this thinking that there was a genuine spirit, right? Like a willing heart to hear. And we went in with that assumption because as black women, we're pretty generous. We're pretty forgiving because we've had to forgive a whole lot in this country from our own people as well as from white fellas, right? And we afforded him that generosity. And it appeared to us in the course of our 1 hour interview with him that he wouldn't say sorry, he wouldn't acknowledge, he did acknowledge the harm, and he seemed genuinely to care. But we sat in a show tonight where he equated genocide with stealing a laptop. We are not laptops. And not only did he not acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which he was standing on, he did not acknowledge Aboriginal women who were sitting in the crowd who he placed in third row in the centre, which he saw us after yarning with us. Good ways. He then proceeded to shout out to the Zimbabweans. But he could not see us. And we spent an hour with him talking about being seen, about how he uses his platform, his stage, but nothing. So, brother, we'll see you in Brisbane. If you want to tune in to hear what makes wild black women wild
and laugh at the same time,
tune in to Wild Black Women.
That's us!
Chelsea Bond.
And Angelina Hurley.
That's right. Wild Black Women, 9 till 10, Friday mornings. So listen or stream 98.9 FM for Wild Black Women. It's Chelsea Bond and Angelina Hurley with Wild Black Women, 9 till 10, Friday mornings. Friday fun day.